Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
The superintendent search, online sports betting, and more tonight on Behind the Headlines. Eric Barnes, President and Executive Editor of the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined tonight by a roundtable of journalists, including Laura Faith Cabetta, reporter with Chalkbeat, which covers education issues in Memphis and the state. Toby Sells is news editor with the Memphis Flyer. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Along with Bill Drees, reporter with the Daily Memphian. We'll start with the superintendent search. We had the interim superintendent, Joris Ray, on the show, I think a couple weeks ago. It's online, and talked about some of his, why his priorities if he is to get the job. We didn't talk a ton about the search at that time. There was the assumption, Laura, and I should let me just set this up, and your story about it is fascinating, that there would be a national search, that he was named in the interim after Dorsey Hopson retired and moved on in January. He is a longtime employee of the Memphis City Schools and now Shelby County Schools. But there's some movement now at the board level to maybe not do a national search. Talk about what's going on.
Yeah, so at one of the committee meetings earlier this month, three board members basically said we would rather just hire Joris Ray outright instead of doing a national search. And so there's a resolution that is expected to come to a vote on Tuesday to see if the board would do that. They would need six votes to be able to appoint someone outright. And this past week, when the resolution was expected to be discussed, the resolution wasn't on the agenda. They didn't mention it at all. So really the most robust discussion, public discussion that we'll get on this will be on Tuesday, right the same day as the vote.
Will there be, when we say public also, is there opportunities for the public to comment and ask questions at those board meetings?
At the board meeting, there will be public comment period. But as far as the public being able to say, this is what we want in our next leader, whoever that may be, if they do hire Joris Ray outright, as the plan was under that resolution, if it's approved, then there won't be that kind of input.
And there, Ray has his supporters. Again, he started, I think, as a teacher, then he was a principal, then he joined the administration.
He was a teacher, assistant principal, and then was promoted to the director of alternative schools for the district. So there's a lot of people who, especially after coming off of Dorsey Hopson, who was a lawyer, was not an educator, who say, well, my goodness, we have a teacher, you know, a former teacher that is in this position and can be able to move the district forward in academic success. But also, at this point, there hasn't been like that public input. At the meeting on Tuesday, there were several supporters that were there wearing Stay With Ray t-shirts. We don't know where they came from quite yet, but
the teachers or the supporters.
It was mostly teachers and administrators that were there.
The t-shirts, by the way. Sorry about that.
I was curious.
Did we know where the t-shirts came from or the supporters came from?
The t-shirts, not sure, but they were handing them out at the central office building during the day to drum up support for him. But there are also other people who want to have a national search and include Dr. Ray in that as well, but. Yeah. To have other people in that.
I'll go to you, Bill. Was there a national search when Dorsey was hired? I can't remember.
No, they made the decision to go with it. They had actually hired a search firm called ProAct at one point. Keep in mind, at this point, they were going into the first and only year of the school's merger. ProAct actually terminated its own contract with the school board and said, we don't think there are going to be a lot of candidates who are going to apply for this that you might want to consider because of the historic nature and the unprecedented nature of the school's merger here. And over the years, there really hasn't been one set way to do this. There have been times when a national search committee has been used. There have been other times when the board has basically said, we'll take it from here. We don't need a search firm. There's been a lot of discussion this time around, as well as in earlier searches, about should a philanthropic foundation, should a philanthropic organization that is specifically involved in education issues pick up the tab for a search? And if such a concern picks up the tab for that search, is that then their way of finding a superintendent who will pursue the kind of agenda that foundation wants to pursue?
Is that the case this time, that the search is funded by a philanthropic group, or is it funded by the?
No, the Memphis Education Fund, which is a group of philanthropic organizations that put money into education, they offered to pick up the tab for the National Search, but the board decided not to go that way.
None of this is to necessarily cast aspersions on George Ray, but just this is, I mean, what is the budget for this Shelby County school system?
A little over a billion.
Mm-hmm. It's the largest expense for county government, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's just been so much change and strife and innumerable shows. I can't imagine how many articles Bill wrote over the years, the flyer, you. I mean, it's just so much that's been going on. So I think that's really why this spotlight is necessary on who this next person is going to be. The other thing is that there have been a couple of stories that have come out. There was a sexual harassment lawsuit that I think, George, talk about that because you reported on it.
Yeah, so there was an anonymous letter that came in the fall before he was named interim superintendent, claiming sexual harassment. It was signed by a first initial and last name. The district opened an investigation and were not able to identify the letter writer, so they closed the investigation. That complaint was never put in his labor file, and it came out in that investigation that there was another claim about misuse of school funds that was later unfounded, but that also was missing from his labor file. So publicly, we don't have a full picture of his employment history.
And I said lawsuit, and I was wrong about that. It was an internal
right.
investigation.
Correct.
It was not a formal
they,
lawsuit.
They hired a law firm, actually, to come in and do that investigation.
So what happens next? And then we'll move on to some other issues here.
Big thing will be on Tuesday when the school board discusses that resolution to figure out whether they want to continue with the national search or just hire Dr. Ray. Not sure what that resolution is going to look like. All we've gotten is just that it's coming. And right now there are three board members that are solidly in favor of hiring Doris Ray.
Okay. As we move on, there's a bunch of education-related issues going on right now. Often these come from the state, sometimes to the benefit. Sometimes people like that, and sometimes people hate it. But the state funds a lot of education throughout the state, but in Shelby County, of course. So the voucher bill, it made some progress this week, but it was, as Sam Stockard, who reports on the Capitol for us at the Daily Memphian, said, it was a historic 40-minute deadlock where the House was tied. Someone had to change their vote. Speaker Glenn Quesada promised that person, Jason Zachary, a Knoxville Republican, changed his vote from no to yes to get the 50 votes they needed, and was told afterward that if he switched his vote in favor of this bill, he was promised that Knox County would be taken out of the legislation. And so this is legislation as currently framed that is include what Knoxville, Davidson, and Shelby counties. He was promised Knox would come out. I believe the Senate bill excludes Knox as well. Mm-hmm. And so for some people in Nashville and Memphis, the biggest cities, this is one more time where the legislature is targeting legislation just at the biggest counties. For other people, you say, well, that's where the schools, there are bad schools, and that's where all the money is spent, so we should be targeting that. Your thoughts on this voucher bill and the way it's playing out in the legislature?
Well, I mean, it really was historic with the House vote, because that's where this bill has died for years in the legislature. And so for it to come down to such a close vote, and for there to be this big pause, which opponents are saying is open to legal challenge, because, you know, you're in the middle of a vote, why pause it when, you know, people have already cast their vote? So it was absolutely historic, but there is this, you think of the ASD, the Achievement School District, which is the state-run district that takes over local schools. That was targeted to Memphis mostly, and then there's also two schools in Nashville. So there is this kind of thought that, wow, the legislature just keeps targeting these these two counties, as opposed to saying, what can we use these for other places as well, if they're so good?
In terms of next, it is the Senate Finance Ways and Means Committee passed the bill 6-5 in a vote. Brian Kelsey locally voted for that. He's been behind bill. He's supported various voucher legislation bills over the years. This one has changed constantly as it's gone through the legislative process. It's been a lot of back and forth. You had a lot of suburban, although, you know, the suburban legislators who were saying in the Memphis area, who it would not affect the Shelby County school or the suburban schools. They didn't like the precedent. They didn't like the idea that these vouchers could come in and students could be able to come out of whatever school in the area, that this voucher bill, although it was targeted at certain types of schools, failing schools and so on, that it could, once you get that bill out there, it could expand. Let me also say it's a $7,300 voucher to enroll at a private school. Your thoughts?
Well, this really, while it became a partisan issue, if you look at the roll call in the House, there were Republicans who voted against this, and there were Democrats who voted for it. And as we're recording this show, the two different versions are attempting to reconcile those two versions so that you have the same piece of legislation there. What was interesting is that Quesada made a statement to the Republicans in his chamber before the vote took place and said, no matter how you vote, I'm going to support you. You know, so in other words, vote your conscience on this and we'll see where the cards lie on that. At the same time, he obviously wanted to see this bill passed in the House in some form. When John DeBerry showed up on the roll call, a Memphis Democrat, as voting for the bill, social media automatically lit up with some pretty prominent Democrats saying, in 2020, we have to primary DeBerry. In other words, he has to be challenged in the Democratic primary in 2020. He's faced stiff challenges in the last two primaries as well.
Toby, your thoughts?
Just as far as proponents and critics of the voucher system, you know, somehow the vote got the attention of the Trump administration, and this week on Wednesday, Trump tweeted, "The great state of Tennessee is so close to passing school choice. All of the nation's children, regardless of background, deserve a shot at achieving the American dream. Time to get this done. So important." Also tweets from Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and, of course, Governor Lee. The critics of the voucher say that they would funnel even more money away from public schools, failing public schools, into private school coffers, and they want the money to stay in those public schools. And they're afraid that there would be less oversight of the quality of the education at those private schools. Some worry about fraud. There was a story in the Tennessean that found that a similar program in Arizona, they found $700,000 in fraudulent spending from the voucher dollars. Some of them were spent at beauty supply stores, sports apparel stores, and other things.
Yeah, I mean, we had the conversation with Interim Superintendent Joris Ray recently, in the last couple of weeks when we had him on the show, about what do you say to parents, to, you know, there are failing schools in Shelby County and throughout the state. There just are. And there have been all these various efforts. Some have been successful. You know, we talk a lot about the innovation zone schools. We focus maybe in some ways on too many of the failing schools in Shelby County. There are many that are doing well or doing great, and many that have been turned around. But there are ones that are failing. And so if you can't figure it out, you know, I think the proponents of these sort of plans say, well, you know, the clock doesn't stop for the kids in these schools. Mm-hmm. You can't, you're trying, even best faith effort, you're trying, but that kid is going from first grade to second grade to third grade and is stuck in a failing school. Why not give other options? And so it's an interesting debate
absolutely.
About that.
Yeah, and to be able to target to that same population of kids, you have to also think that these education savings accounts don't cover the full cost of tuition, which is very different than previous voucher legislation. So if a parent is going to get this $7,300, either the private school will have to provide scholarship money or they'll just have to come up with the rest of it on their own. So that is different. And so a lot of opponents have said, well, then how is that really targeting those kids that are coming from low-income families and from those failing schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about with George Ray, that, and then we'll move on. I mean, the sort of top rated, at least, private schools in Memphis are upwards of $20,000 to $22,000, $23,000 a year now. There are some that are much less than that, but it's an interesting debate. And go ahead.
That was a key difference. If you look at the voucher legislation that Bill Haslam proposed when he was governor, his versions always had a more specific income guideline for when this would kick in, and he was insistent that if the state money, $7,300, I forget what it was then, but that if that amount traveled with the student to a private school, then that was going to be what the full tuition cost would be for that student at that school.
Yeah, I should also say, I think at least in earlier versions of the bill, it has changed a bunch, the idea is that the governor has said that the money that comes out of the school system, that $7,300 that comes out of whatever school where that child used to be, will be backfilled for a certain number of years. I should say that as well. Let's move on to a charter commission bill that passed the Senate. What is that bill about? And Memphis has so many, I don't know how many charter schools in Memphis, 40?
About 50.
Probably 50 of them. Mm-hmm. What is this charter commission at the state level? What's that about?
So it's basically moving from the State Department or the State Board of Education has the power to basically either agree with a local school district or to overrule them when they say that they don't want to approve a charter school in their area. And so instead of putting that under the State Board of Education, which has been really bogged down and backed up with this responsibility, which the governor says wasn't really what they were meant to do, it's creating a new commission of 9 people that would be their sole focus, is to be able to talk about those approvals and that sort of thing. And if they overrule a local school district, then they would also be in charge of that charter school.
Right. Would this change the local approval process, or just give another layer of a way to sort of overrule the local process?
The latter. So yeah, it would give, so the local school board would still have that first shot of deciding, is this charter school going to come in or not?
Okay. Let's stay with the legislature and move on to sports betting. And I'll turn to you, Bill, and we'll get other people input here, but it's an online sports betting bill. It's been heavily pushed by, and we had a couple of them on, Senator Akbari and Robinson from Shelby County, who say, look, I mean, there's what the estimates of some, you know, billions of dollars that are lost, you know, mm-hmm. in these estimates, because it's not legal in Tennessee, so people use offshore or internet-based. They're based somewhere else, and Tennessee doesn't benefit from it. It passed the House, and it goes to the Senate. Your thoughts?
Akbari and Robinson are co-sponsors of the legislation, and the House G.A. Hardaway from Memphis is also another sponsor of the legislation. And it also has the backing of the Strickland administration at City Hall, as well as the Memphis City Council, with the thought at City Hall being that if there is a sports book here, that it could be located on Beale Street as part of the Beale Street Entertainment District. Well, the bill's been amended pretty significantly toward the end of the session to eliminate a bricks and mortar requirement for a sports book. It could be done by an app or some other digital means to actually make the bet on it. I don't think that would necessarily stop a business from opening and saying, hey, we welcome people who are betting on sports here, but that's still being determined at this point. And the argument here among our legislators who favor this is that we're bordered by Arkansas and Mississippi. You know, Arkansas has Southland just across the bridge from us. Tunica, the some of the casinos down there are having a hard time, but they already went with a sports book at one of the casinos there just as soon as the ink on the Supreme Court ruling was dry there.
I mean, Toby, this debate's been going on. I've lived in Memphis 25 years. Around the time I moved here, Splash Casino, going back in time, was the first riverboat casino sure. that opened in Tunica. I remember going down there with some friends, and it was a riverboat in the sense that there was a barge floating in some mucky water. I'm not saying there are nice casinos, but this was a really tacky casino, and that was the beginning. And I remember that debate back then, and it continues now, that there's all this tourism money, local money, hospitality money, a loss of workers. I mean, in its heyday, when there were, I don't know how many casinos down there in the Tunica area, you would hear restaurants and hotels here say, look, we can't compete with the labor that goes down there. Now you've got Arkansas expanding, I mean, hundreds mm-hmm. of millions of dollars in investment in what used to be sort of dog parks and horse racing tracks, and now they're allowed to do, I think they had video poker, now they've got sports bet. I mean, it's...
And live gaming now.
And live gaming. I mean, it's effectively, they are casinos. They've got some sort exactly. of weird terminology to call it otherwise. Your thoughts on the competitive nature of this in terms of the loss of revenue?
like you, when I got here about 12 years ago, it was interesting to me to see gambling on both sides of the border and that we didn't have it, and what a missed opportunity, I guess. You'd see the billboards everywhere from Beale Street to Midtown, and now when you drive around those same places, you're seeing those same billboards, but they're all about sports betting. And you got to think that people in Memphis see that every day, whereas, you know, legislators maybe in Nashville or Knoxville don't see that as much. But I did a story and looked at revenues for sports betting in North Mississippi, just that sector, from the Mississippi Gaming Commission, and they're astounding. I mean, they were north of $40 million easily in a quarter just on their sports book. And, you know, if you're a lawmaker looking at taxes, it's got to look pretty good.
But here's the thing: if you're that legislator, you're also looking for a stable source of revenue.
Certainly.
And the history of casino gaming, legal casino gaming in North Mississippi, has been pretty turbulent. Splash opened on Moon Landing within the city of Tunica. As soon as casino gaming was ruled out in DeSoto County, which would have been right up against Memphis, and a very good reason for having it up against Memphis, as soon as that was ruled out, all of the casinos that had been at Moon Landing, including two that I went to that opened on the same night, this is how frantic the activity was there, they all moved to as close as they could possibly get out of Tunica to the Tunica-DeSoto County line. And now you've got Roadhouse Tunica, they're auctioning off all of their fixtures for their casino there. It's been a pretty turbulent history, and sports book betting is jumping out of the box right now, but how long will it be?
Certainly. Well, the only counter to that would be, you know, you look at Southland, which has been over the past few years just adding hundreds of millions of dollars of expansions, and they're going through a huge one right now. So I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on it, but, you know, it looks pretty solid over there.
Let me just a couple of facts here. We'll move on with just a few minutes left. The companies that want to do this, it would be administered by this is the House bill, and it's still got to go through the Senate. The Tennessee Lottery Corporation that manages the lottery would oversee this. There'd be a $750,000 license. The House members claim there are 10 people have lined up to show interest already. There'd be a 20% privilege tax, with 80% of that going toward lottery scholarships, 15% to local governments for infrastructure and education, and 5% for mental health. And again, I think by and large, what I've heard in terms of the critics of this is it's more of a moral issue, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's gambling. It's also, it's online sports betting. You start here, but that's just, you're tiptoeing down the road. So with just a couple minutes left, we mentioned hospitality and all that. I was walking downtown recently, and I think I counted under construction right now, downtown hotels, I think there are 5 or 6 that I walked past, something like that. It's pretty amazing. Most of those are anywhere from boutique 50-person hotels to maybe 100 or 2. We've had some convolutions, Toby, in the big convention center hotel that's proposed down there, with a group splitting apart. One group owned 100 North Main, the other wanted to build a tower. Now Lowe's wants to just build that tower. They've moved away from the 100 North Main partnership, and it looks like the city wants to go in that direction.
Signed a letter of intent this week to get that done. It was, that kind of kicks off what has been years of planning on this process. You know, the renderings as they look right now, that building would look really different than anything that's down there. There's a huge plate of glass that kind of faces the north that says Lowe's. Of course, all of that can change. So it'll be a sharp contrast to anything down there. And they come at the same time where we've got $200 million worth of renovations at the Cook Convention Center. Is that the right figure, Bill? Mm-hmm. And so it would be a 20-plus story hotel, 500-room hotel. And a lot of this is in an effort to compete with really Nashville, I think, you know, with Music City Center. If you guys have been there and seen that, it's this blocks long, massive, beautiful facility with all the modern amenities. And folks here say that we just can't compete. Folks in the region, even Atlanta, you know, see that as kind of this big vacuum, and it just has been sucking in all of the convention business into that thing down there. And Doug McGowan, the chief operating officer for the city of Memphis, told the Memphis Business Journal that the Lowe's deal fulfills the promise of a wholly reimagined convention center. And when it opens, it and the Sheraton, with those together, Memphis Tourism will be able to block off about 1,100 rooms for big conventions. And so it'll be a huge amenity and a huge uptick for those folks.
Thoughts on what happens next, Bill?
There's still a lot of discussion about what happens with the 100 North Main building, the tallest building in the city, which THM owns. According to the city, there's nothing to rule out THM from pursuing a restoration of that and the two 30-story towers that would go with it. THM is still trying to sort itself out and see if it wants to try to compete with a convention center hotel for the same tourism development zone revenue.
And that's that TDZ money that would help to fund what this big
right.
Lowe's hotel.
The letter of intent is specifically the city saying that we're on our way to a permanent agreement. While we're on that way, we're only going to negotiate with Lowe's on that prospect.
And with just a minute left, I was going to do more on the budget, but there's one part because I'm still honestly frustrated by this Wall Street Journal article about from a few weeks ago about incentives and claiming Memphis, sort of painting Memphis as the only city in America that takes incentives. Right now, the FedEx is looking at about $21 million in tax breaks, basically, for its big billion-dollar expansion of the hub, which apparently the Wall Street Journal now argue they're the only ones taking incentives again, except that there's $65 million in the budget for the Amazon facility and $50 million in the Volkswagen expansion in Chattanooga. I mean, this whole expansion thing just sort of continues. With just 30 seconds left, I also wanted to say a quick note of thanks. Madeline Faber, who has been the editor of High Ground News and a frequent guest whenever we do these roundtables. She used to work at the Daily News and the old Daily News. She is moving on to other things. She's going to graduate school. And I wanted a quick note of thanks. She's always been a great voice on these panels, and I appreciated her being here. And I appreciate all you being here. Thank you very much. We've got a county budget preview coming up and other shows. So join us again next week. Good night.